It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
So we now know about K-State beating Oklahoma. What does that mean, though, for the future? How much does that move you for next year and beyond and where the program is headed? Because I would tell you, it doesn't move me a lot. It moves me some, but where it moves me to, I don't think is going to satisfy anybody by the end of next year. Welcome into The Game, John Kurtz, Mitch Fortner with you. Tweet us at The Game KMAN, at JL Kurtz, at Mitch the Fort. I raised this question because yesterday, tried to keep most of the focus on, hey, K-State won a game. They've won two in a row. It's been a really rough year. Let's keep the spotlight there for the most part. Talk about how Bruce Weber it is to have beaten a top 10 team and lost to a Division II team in the same year and have that be the only team since Tim Duncan was rolling around at Wake Forest to do so in college basketball. But the real question has to be asked now. I mean, one, I suppose the question is still out there. Does Bruce Weber come back? I think most everybody can start to answer that for themselves at this moment, because we had already been hearing publicly from Gene Taylor, K-State's athletic director, that he was really in support of it, wasn't thinking about making a change. I didn't think it was finalized at that point, because if they kept losing in historic fashion, I still think there's a way that that could have happened, and he was trying to get everybody off of his back. But it's clear that there is an inclination to have that be the position of everybody, and now that position just got easier to back up, because there are a couple of wins here. They're going to play Iowa State. Well, K-State is rested, and Iowa State is the total opposite of that next week. Good chance that you win that game, and now you're talking about three Big 12 wins here at the end of the year, a one-game improvement from where they were at last year. You can start to do the math. So to me, the important question then becomes, like, where are we going to be at in a year? How much does this make you feel better about where the program will be at in a year? Because my answer is, like, it makes me feel better about them being a 6 or a 7-win Big 12 team next year, which I did have legitimate questions about, before the Oklahoma game and particularly before the TCU game. Trying to take a jump from being a 3 or 4 Big 12 win team, especially with everything that happened this year and the circumstances, to a 6 or a 7-win Big 12 team, like, okay, you can get me on board to buy that. I still think it's a stretch to go a heck of a lot further than that. And if you are just a 6 or a 7-win Big 12 team next year, is anybody satisfied with that? I mean, that's an NIT-ish team, depending on how the non-conference schedule goes. And I don't think anybody around here is really happy with an NIT team when it's been 3 years at that point since you would have gone to the NCAA tournament. So that's where I'm at, and why I say that the Oklahoma game is not doing a ton for me to really feel dramatically different about where exactly the program is headed.
All right, so we had the conversation yesterday about the Oklahoma win 2016. When Oklahoma's number one versus this win against Oklahoma just a couple of days ago. And, you know, what felt like the bigger upset, what means more in certain situations. So I'm actually going to kind of go back to that comparison, because I think it fits, because you might remember that 2016 year was right after the mass departure of the Marcus Foster class, where 10 guys exited, either by graduation or transfer.
Yep, you're talking 15-16, by the way.
Yes, and then the 15-16 year was the arrival of Dean Wade, Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes, a bunch of others, but they're the three that stuck around for the entire year. So we kind of have our same situation, where that team, when Dean, Barry, and Cam came in, they weren't that great. They were just a game or two above 500, one game above 500, and they had 5 conference wins. This team this year can still win the 5 conference games. They're not going to have a winning record, all right? This year has been more brutal than that year, with freshman Dean, Barry, and Cam. But there's just right now too many questions that still need to be answered to make me believe that there's going to be a lot of improvement heading into next year. Like, this team's going to be a lot more improved, like what we saw with freshman Dean Barry and Cam go into sophomore year, because you're right. Remember, that was an NCAA tournament team that went to the – well, they went to Dayton and then won that game against Wake Forest and then got bounced in the first round of the tournament. But what I'm saying here is, you know, who's going to leave off of this team? You know, because we're probably expecting some transfers. All right, who's going to be leaving? What's going to be left? Is there going to be enough to believe that, all right, we got the main core of guys back? Does Mike McGurl come back? I'm questioning too many things to believe, all right, this team, when they come back next year, they have all the same guys, are going to be stronger and better than ever, and we're going to see a lot of improvement.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the 16-17 team, because that to me is kind of the point. We waste so much time. Waste is strong, but we use a lot of time talking about Dean Barry, Cam compared to Selton, Nigel, Davion. But the key and the kicker in all of this has been that 15-16 team that this team has drawn so many comparisons to because of the young guys. That team had DJ and Wes. So did the 16-17 team. So did that team the next year that did make the jump to being an NCAA tournament team. So first of all, that team was not making as big of a leap. They were a 5-13 Big 12 team, but they had been painstakingly close in a number of games. There were like 7 losses by single digits or overtime in Big 12 play, a couple of overtime losses. They were close to being better. They were not getting beaten historically, and they were going to finish at least a game or two better than where this team is at right now. And then they brought back Wes and DJ, and that is senior year Wesley Awundu. That is an NBA player, now a 4-year NBA vet that was leading the way for you. Like, that's the big difference. You still don't have one of those players next year. So you're talking about, hey, Nigel better make a bigger jump than Barry Brown did from freshman to sophomore year, or Davion Bradford better make a bigger jump than Dean Wade from freshman to sophomore year. Those are the kinds of things that will have to happen to make up for that if they're going to even flirt with being a tournament team. That team in 16-17 had all of that. They had all of that. And they were one of the last 4 teams into the field. And it still almost fell apart. They lost that game by 30 in Norman to a bad Oklahoma team at the end of that year. And it looked like they were not going to get in. And 16-17 added Xavier Sneed. So you add Wes Awundu, DJ Johnson, Xavier Sneed. They have Logan Landers coming in, and I know that he had a kind of mythical Kansas offer, not a committable Kansas offer. But on paper, I mean, he's a 3-star prospect who's not in the top 150. Xavier Sneed was a 4-star prospect who was number 93. Logan Landers could come in and be far better. We don't know the answer to that. But at least right now, based on what we know on paper, like, that team next year will have far less in terms of experienced veteran talent than 16-17 did, and that team barely snuck into the field. So, I mean, the only other thing I can really buy here, if you're talking about, hey, next year, if you keep the band together, run it all back, they can be a tournament team. The only other thing I can really buy or listen to is maybe if you're into this Bruce Weber line of thinking that the Big 12 is going to lose so much next year that the league will be considerably different, will be considerably weaker. And I would bet that it will be slightly weaker. I don't think that it's going to be considerably weaker enough to make that kind of a difference. So that's where I just keep coming back to that number of being like a 6 or a 7 win-ish Big 12 team. Like, this team started from further back than where the Dean Barry and Cam rebuild started. And they still have further to go with less ammunition, I would tell you, on the roster already in-house to do so.
I don't think K-State fans are going to be happy with 6 or 7 wins. I mean, you want 500 at least, if you're K-State fans. But keep in mind, I mean, this team is still going to be really young next year. If Mike McGurl sticks around, you go from having one senior to 2 seniors. If Rudy Williams is around, and Rudy, you know, doesn't get much playing time, and he's kind of been disappointing in my eyes. I was expecting more, but also with this class that came in last year, came in this year, the freshman this year, Carlton Lingard, he never plays. Suri Lewis, he never plays. Luke Kasubke needs a lot of work. Just don't think the depth that should be there with this kind of class and moving into next year, it's not going to be enough to be a much improved team. I'm just not seeing it yet. And I can't let two great wins in a row, don't get me wrong, make up for a 13-game losing streak. 13-game losing streak after the water settles against Oklahoma beating the Sooners, the seventh-ranked team in the country. Once that settles, it's still hard not to remember that K-State lost a lot of games badly during that stretch.
Yes. Yes, they did, and we've seen it for 2 years now. Like, this team just be very, very bad. Bottom of the barrel, Power 5 kind of a team, bad. And we've now seen a couple of weeks of being better and more competitive with two wins back-to-back. Albeit a great win against Oklahoma, but two wins. And you just... you have to be careful with that sometimes. You do. Like, let me see the sample size for the rest of the year. Let me see what happens in the offseason. You have to be careful with that. I think of this analogy when I talk about this. Like, girl I was dating was great until it gets to a point. Then she starts to become the worst, be very flaky. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm out. I'm done with this. And then, no. Keep going. Like, I'll be better. And then it gets better for about a week. And you're like, okay, all right, I can buy back in on this. And then guess what happens? Bottom falls out, turns back into what it was before, the worst. And it takes a couple of cycles for you to totally figure it out and be like, all right, I got to just bail on this thing. But that's what you can't fall into that trap here where it's like, okay, yeah, they were better for a week. They were better and actually won some basketball games. But that doesn't erase what is a much longer track record of everything that we have to base this team and this program off of right now.
In my mind, though, I have this worry that the offseason is going to be rough. I do worry that some guys are going to leave that K-State will definitely want to stick around. Like, for instance, Dejuan Gordon. All right? I know some people.
Let's be careful with that. Let's not just recklessly throw out names that we think might transfer.
I'm using an example as Dejuan Gordon because I.
Okay, well, if we're going to do that, let's just leave name. I'd prefer to leave names out of it instead of just recklessly speculating because we have no inside information on any of that.
Well, no.
I would just say it's playing the numbers game. Guys leave every year, so you would expect that there would be some roster movement.
But what I'm getting at is somebody who has 2 years of experience at K-State, you know, there might be some guys, I just threw out Dejuan Gordon, but could it be anybody? It feels like, well, man, I'm good, but I just can't win with this team. I maybe should try somewhere else. Well, you know, somebody like Dejuan or somebody at his level, I'm sorry, but where K-State is at right now, you need a guy like that. Even if you're not a big fan of him, even though he is a part of a struggling team, that's the hand K-State's been dealt. You need a guy like that. That it just worries me that some of the older guys are going to maybe feel like, all right, well, I've played 2 years here. Maybe I should try somewhere else. Because then K-State's going to have to take another step back. That's really what it is.
There's not much room for error. There's not much margin for error. But even if we're talking about the entire roster coming back, I still get stuck on about 6 or 7 wins. And I don't think that's going – we'll be having the same conversation next year – except 3 years removed from the NCAA tournament next year if that winds up being the case. Now, I think Kellis has fired back for my comments about newspapers yesterday. He's trying to personally offend and take on the show now, and we'll give you the details on that next. We will not have Kellis Robinette on. I guess I'm just thinking out loud here. We're not having a show tomorrow because of baseball, right? So I guess we should have just called Kellis for this.
I can cold call him right now.
Give it a shot. See what happens. Give it a shot. K-State baseball tomorrow at 3 o'clock. That is why we will not be having Kellis. But I have a feeling that he was irked by my comments about newspapers yesterday on the show. And he's, because of that, taken to stealing from Mitch's reporting and taking away from, quote-unquote, the game beat by getting reporting on the Sandstorm being played actually against Oklahoma earlier this week, which Mitch had an exclusive report about that, about how it went down, about text messages to Gene Taylor, about Gene giving the go-ahead, all of that. And Kellis all of a sudden runs a story about it today. I know via Twitter that he was upset about the fact that I said this. Now, I could go off on a diatribe about how newspapers are a dying breed and it's the newspaper reporters that still get the front row seats down below and the rest of us don't, and, you know, hey, that's not a K-State problem. That's a problem all the way around. You see that everywhere. The best seats go to the newspapers. I don't know why we still live like it's 1956 in that regard, but we do. 56 might have been a little bit too modern. It may be more like the 1940s, if we're going back to that, the heyday of the newspaper. Heyday of the old rag out there that you can get on the street corner. But Mitch, he's stealing your reporting. He's stealing your beat here. Let me read you this from Kellis. First of all, he points out that, and I had forgotten about this, University President Richard Myers called the chant to Sandstorm personally embarrassing and not what one expects from a world-class university in a letter to the public 4 years ago. Pretty strong. It's a strongly worded letter. This is from Kellis's article, though. But a return for K-State's thrilling victory on Tuesday night and was even accompanied by a video graphic that read Sandstorm in massive letters above center court. Turns out there was some planning involved. Gene Taylor told the Eagle via text message he gets questions about Sandstorm during virtually every close basketball game the Wildcats play at home. So they keep the controversial song, quote, on the ready just in case, end quote, and they find an appropriate time to play it following a big play or a momentum-shifting run. I mean, that's basically the reporting that you did yesterday. That is the exact reporting that you did yesterday.
Now, is there anywhere in that article of quoting me or mentioning me in there, you know, at Mitch the Fort on Twitter, just Mitch Fortner, the voice on K-Man about, talking about Gene Taylor initiating the playing of Sandstorm at the end of the Oklahoma game.
The voice on K-Man, huh? Not a voice on K-Man?
The most heard voice on K-Man.
Okay. No, there is no mention of a Mitch, Fortner, Mitch the Fort, the letters K-M-A-N. There's nothing. Nothing there at all.
Well, guess who's not saying bye to Kellis anymore?
Wow. What needs to happen for that to actually be rectified then?
Well, we definitely need a correction, maybe even a reissue of the story. Can we put it in tomorrow's paper?
I think a correction is a great idea, actually. You know, you see those run in newspapers every once in a while, or, you know, I don't know, if you're still looking at a newspaper, I guess you do. See it online, maybe. Like an official correction, and it can just be like, hey, listen, we stole this. This was plagiarism. If it were a school environment, if this were a Scantron test, it would be thrown out. It would not be allowed, and all of a sudden you'd be taking summer school classes.
You know, maybe, and Kellis wasn't able to do this year due to the pandemic, but what we've typically seen from Kellis in the past at, like, football press conferences when we break away and the players come in. Well, Kellis will take his cell phone, put it on a selfie stick, and just shove it in players' faces to get an interview in, and so he could post it on, you know, the Star website or the Wichita Eagles website. And, you know, maybe he could shove a phone in my face and interview me about it, and I could tell his story again. So that way maybe the newspapers could get a few subscriptions.
It's another very good idea. I think that should just run with the story that has the correction. Like, just online, the story with the correction, it'll just have your big face there. It always cracks me up, some of the faces that get pause, that's like the freeze frame when it's up there. So it'll just be your face paused awkwardly mid-sentence with a big playhead over it that somebody can click play on and actually get the legitimate reporting here. I will say the one thing that he did go above and beyond with, Mitch, is that he said, can fans expect to hear the song more regularly at home games? Not unless K-State can find a way to eliminate the KU chant, Taylor said. The chant could be heard while the song played Tuesday. So unless something is to happen on that front, there will be no more Sandstorm coming. I didn't hear that necessarily in your official report. So Kellis took yours and just piggybacked off of it. It was kind of like you threw him the alley and he threw down the oop.
Let's be clear here. Once it all took place, I didn't take my phone out, press record on the voice memo app, and start asking Gene Taylor a bunch of questions about Sandstorm. Where'd the idea come from? Why now? Why here? Why now?
That's because you're not a Big J journo.
Or, you know, I was doing another job at the time, and the folks at Brandledge needed me more than the people of Cayman at the time, but because I had to announce the final score and everything, and K-State hitting some free throws, needed to announce the free throw shooter. But I did talk to Brett, who was on my right, and that's who I really got the story from. So I think the eyewitness account would add a lot to Kellis' story, but, you know, he likes shortcuts.
Well, you better quit outing your sources here, or else Kellis is going to scoop all of those up. You're going to have no sources left to go to anybody on anything. You'll lose all that. I'm just concerned for the show's sake. I don't want the faucet of information to be shut off.
By the way, I called Kellis, and I got the voicemail after two rings, so I would imagine probably at this time he's probably laying out the graham crackers and chocolate milk for the children at home, so or whatever journalists give their children in the afternoon.
Yeah, he's in Professor Kellis mode, I would imagine, here. I mean, not literally, I'm sure, teaching them, but to the point that he is encumbered by them, all right? Or he's just ducking our calls. It could be that he's ducking our calls, Mitch. Did you ever think of that?
Oh, it was
super. What are you talking about?
It was super suspicious.
That's it. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, oh, you know, he's just being Professor Kellis. No, he's ducking our calls. He's ducking our calls. He does not want to have to own up to this plagiarism of your own reporting. And much like my alley-oop analogy, like you throw him the alley and he knocks down the oop. Who gets the shine in that scenario? Is it the dunker or the guy that throws the pass? Now, it's never the guy that throws the pass. It's always going to be the dunker.
Hey, at least he's in the scorebook with the assist. You know, better than nothing.
I don't know. I think here it's pretty much nothing. I think it's pretty much nothing. All those clicks went to Kellis' story because of your reporting.
I'm not in
nothing
it for the clicks.
Back to you.
I'm not in it for the clicks. Never been that guy. Kellis has always been that guy, you know. Twitter followers are just as good as money to somebody like that, you know?
All right. As long as you're okay with it and in a decent place. That's the main thing I care about, though I do also care about the show getting credit. We need to be the headline makers. The NCAA tournament could get pretty wild based on what we found out today. We'll give you the info on that next.
Number you have ever reached. Breaking news.
We here at News Radio KMAN, with the utmost of journalistic integrity, regret to inform you of a correction that is necessary to be made here.
Oh, God.
We previously reported that Mitch's story and reporting on Sandstorm being played at Brambridge Coliseum was stolen and plagiarized by one Kellis Robinette of the Wichita Eagles and Kansas City Star. However, upon further review, the article was actually posted at 1:04 p.m. yesterday, approximately 3 hours before we hit the air. News Radio KMAN deeply regrets this error.
Well, gosh darn.
That's what you have to say to that? That's all you have to say? Nothing else?
That was your segment. I don't know what happened.
You're going to throw the blame back on me? This was about you, Mitch. I was sticking up for you.
I mean, I come in the office, and you're like, Kellis this, Kellis that. You won't believe what he did. And this is a war, huh?
This is not about me.
I mean, I honestly thought, because when you told me about it, because I hadn't read the article, and and you made it, you obviously you brought it along, like, hey, Kellis stole some of your content here. I was like, well, you know, it was probably because you got after him yesterday about journalism integrity and called him out.
Well, no, I didn't get after him about integrity. I just got after him about how they still get the awesome seats while we're stuck up in the cheap seats and the nosebleeds.
Too. Yeah, that too.
When, you know, people haven't gone to their street corner to get a newspaper since 19... I don't know. When was World War I? So
in the teens.
Yeah. Yes. That is why we do not have the Big J's. Our J's are not very big. They are not as big as Kellis's, and that is why we have now issued said correction. This I'm reading straight right now from a USA Today story, people. So you can't blame me for any lack of journalistic integrity that may or may not come up the rest of this segment. This came from the NCAA, went to some guy named Eric Smith from the USA Today, and now into my mouth.
Now, did you check the published date? You know, this isn't from last year, was it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
We're okay. This is a story about the NCAA tournament. So there's a contingency plan basically for teams to play if you have teams in the first round of the tournament that can't go because of COVID. Now, once the tournament starts, you cannot replace any teams. It would be a no contest if some team gets hit with COVID badly enough that they can't actually make the time to play their game and the other team advances on. So you think K-State caught a break when Virginia lost in the 1-16 matchup. Just imagine being like a 16 or being like that 8-9 winner and your one seed can't go because of COVID. But things could get really wild. And I love this, by the way. I love this. I'm so here for all the zaniness that we could see in the NCAA tournament. So the first priority in replacing any team that would be forced to withdraw here would be that all 31 conferences need to be represented. So what that means, if it's a one-bid league and one of those teams is gone, somebody else from their league gets the opportunity to fulfill that spot. But the seeding doesn't change. The seeding cannot change. So what that means is, like, the West Coast Conference. I assume the West Coast Conference is a one-bid league this year, just because every time I look at Gonzaga, they're playing a team that's like 6-13.
I mean, that's a conference where you need to win that tournament most of the time.
Or just be Gonzaga.
Or if you're St. Mary's and you happen to be good that year.
Yeah, or just be Gonzaga. I was trying to check bracketology and see where the West Coast Conference is at. But say, in this case, that Gonzaga is a one seed, then has a COVID outbreak, they turn into Baylor, and they're donezo, they're out. Well, now, are you taking like 3-16 San Diego and throwing them in there? I mean, like, somebody else from the WCC could be thrust into a one seed position, which would be just great. I'm here for all the chaos. That would be awesome. Now, all of a sudden, you got a great matchup. Like, let's see, who is Gonzaga? They're supposed to play North Carolina A&T, according to this bracketology. So now all of a sudden we've got San Diego against North Carolina A&T in a 1-16 matchup.
It's a 1-16. There, you might get a 16 upset in there.
That would be amazing. You know what? This year's already screwed up. The team that I support does not have a stake in this deal. Give me all the chaos. And if you are somebody that doesn't have it, as long as you're not a fan of Gonzaga, Baylor, somebody that's like a top 3 or 4 seed, who cares, man? Who cares? Let's shake it up. Let's mix it up. Casual fans here should be all about this. Not that I'm rooting for anybody to get COVID, but if that is going to happen, which it seems like an inevitability that it would happen to somebody, like, let's make this thing fun. Now, if it's a team from a multi-bid league, then it would just go to one of the last four teams out.
Oh.
So the four number one seeds in the NIT, the four number one seeds in the NIT will be like next in line to be replacement teams. But again, Mitch, they have to inherit the seed of the team that is being knocked out. So still, say it was Baylor. If Baylor were to have issues again, then all of a sudden you would have, like, I'm looking at Colorado State here as one of the last four in, as a 12. Well, now Colorado State is a one seed. Colorado State is a one seed. So you have Colorado State and Prairie View A&M going at it in a 1-16 game. We could see scenarios like that actually playing out. Just so much wackiness. Embrace the craziness of the tournament. That's why we all love March Madness anyway. That's why it has this broad mass appeal, even though nobody's watching a second of regular season college basketball anymore these days. Everybody still loves the tournament. And it's because it gets crazy. It's because you just get to, you know, like taking a bunch of dice and shaking them up in the Yahtzee thing and just throwing them out there and see what happens. That's why everybody loves the NCAA tournament, so why not just add to that?
Man, it really is too bad that that rule doesn't apply to, say, like Baylor, because Baylor's been sandbagging itself for the past 3 weeks, or even go back to January where they had to miss time because of COVID, and they just missed 3 weeks of games due to COVID issues. You know, Baylor gets tossed from the tournament because they get COVID again. So what if that meant that the next team up in the Big 12 that didn't make it in, the first team out of the conference, would then jump into the tournament for their conference brethren spot? Because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, K-State all of a sudden has something to play for. Because seven teams get in. Seven teams are going to probably get into the NCAA tournament out of the Big 12. Well, guess who that next team would be out? That would, or the first team out, that would be TCU. They're 4-8. Cats are a game back. All right, K-State wins out the rest of the season, and all of a sudden, the Cats maybe get that number 8 spot in the Big 12 standings, and they would be the first team in if one of the seven schmoes ahead of them gets bounced out because of COVID.
Well, I would prefer to look at it through the lens of that team that we talked about earlier that was a first four team in 16-17. Think about if that team is sitting there in the first four and all of a sudden they find out, hey guys, guess what? Michigan. Michigan can't go. We're a one seed, baby. We're a one seed. We just went from the NIT to becoming a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Now you're set up for a run. Let's strap this thing up and go. Let's go.
Well, you know what? 3 years ago, some folks were complaining because, oh, K-State got an easy run to the Elite Eight because Virginia lost. Come on.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a comparison there.
That's what I'm saying. We'll probably be seeing some more stories play out like that because of what is happening with the contingency plans here. I am all about it. All about it. My interest in the NCAA tournament just went up with this. Mitch has to get out of here, so we'll do number one song of the day next.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Boy, I did not know that's how the original sounded. You were looking up the Jessica Simpson version earlier, and I was like, well, I know that. Yeah, research purposes only. I don't know that you needed the music video to it.
Well, that's what popped up first. But 1966, These Boots Are Made for Walking by Nancy Sinatra. 1 week at number one. An American singer and actress from Jersey City, New Jersey. She is the elder daughter of Frank Sinatra. Now, also with her singing, she's known as an actress as well. She has starred next to Elvis Presley, Peter Fonda. She's even appeared in The Sopranos in the final season. She even received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, May 11th, 2016. She is one of the oldest women to pose for Playboy. That was in May of 1995 at the age of 54. But as a singer, 14 studio albums, 10 top 40 songs. This was her first of two number one hits. Now, Boots is her debut studio album. Now, at the time, she was on the same record label as her famous father, Frank Sinatra, but she was going nowhere with her career. I mean, singles were flopping next and right. She was not even landing on the Hot 100. So things changed when her dad was like, hey, you know what? You know, let's start working together. You know, I'm Frank Sinatra. I have ties to the media. I have ties to the mob. All right, we can get you some hits here. So they teamed up with producer Lee Hazelwood, who would write some songs for them.
Are you ready, Boots?
And the first song they did together was So Long, Babe. Yeah, that was all right. It's a minor hit. But then These Boots Are Made for Walking was released, and it was a major hit across the country. It went number one in about half the countries that were doing charts at the time. I mean, there's quite a few of them out there, but at the time, Lee Hazelwood, he wrote the song. He's like, you know what? This is actually a really good song. I'm probably just going to keep it. I'm just going to keep this song. But then she talked him out of it. She was like, hey, this isn't really, you know, a guy singing this song just kind of comes off harsh and abusive. you know, let a girl sing this song. You know, we're going to make some money doing it that way. So that's what they did. Now, this song was famously used in a scene from the movie Full Metal Jacket, where they transitioned to the GIs in Vietnam, where a woman in a miniskirt, you know, propositions to a couple of American GIs, if you know what I mean, John. Which, by the way, Full Metal Jacket is on your list of movies that you're supposed to watch. You never got to Full Metal Jacket. I truly think that's a movie
you
would
enjoy. Maybe I did.
No, you didn't. Nope, you didn't. Now, Goodyear Tire and the Rubber Company with Goodyear used parts of this song in its 1960s ad campaign promoting its wide boots tires. Well, Nancy Sinatra, she sued them, and she was unsuccessful at the time, claiming that it had violated her publicity rights. Now, this song has been famously covered by a lot of superstars out there, including the Supremes, Hank Williams Jr., Loretta Lynn, Billy Ray Cyrus has covered this song. Megadeth has covered this song.
Megadeth?
Yes, I didn't even know that when I read up on this song. But the most famous cover is Jessica Simpson and Willie Nelson. They did the cover together because they recorded this song for the 2005 movie The Dukes of Hazzard. Nelson played Uncle Jesse in the movie, and Jessica Simpson played Daisy Duke. And in the video, there's a brawl that breaks out at the Boar's Nest, which is the bar there in Hazzard. The version was used in a TV ad as well for Pizza Hut, starring Jessica Simpson in the Daisy Duke shorts, and a pizza number 14 in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that one. I definitely do. Came all back to me when I saw that music video you were watching earlier. Derek Young from K-State Online scheduled to join us next. Talk about what the future holds for Bruce Weber and how much more optimistic you should be after the win on Tuesday.
And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking.